They searched the area of the camp and then took the bait and followed the false trail that Job and I had laid for them.
So we're clear then? Ricardo asked.
Looks like it, Sean agreed. And if we push along, we should be able to reach the beginning of the swamps either this evening or early tomorrow.
What about Tukatila? Ricardo asked.
Well, we know from his track approximately where he would have reached the swamps. We'll just cast along the edge until we find where he went in. But we've lost a lot of ground on him. We'll have to go hard if we don't want him to get away from us.
Do you feel up to it, Capo?
Never better, Ricardo said. Lead on, man. Before they set off again, Sean went quickly over their packs. They'd consumed a great deal of the provisions, and he redistributed the remainder. By giving both Job and himself an extra 10 pounds or so, he was able to reduce Ricardo's pack to 20 pounds and Claudia's to a mere 10 pounds, just her sleeping bag and personal items. They both responded well to their reduced burdens, but Sean once again marched beside Ricardo to encourage him and watch over him. Claudia was still going surprisingly well. He needn't have worried about her at all. Under her light pack, she was stepping out lithely. He took pleasure in watching her long legs driving and her hard little buttocks oscillating in those tight blue jeans. They reminded him of the cheeks of a chipmunk chewing a nut. They were on the valley floor now, and there were open flace and baobabs, those trees with bloated trunks, bark like a reptile's skin, and crooked, bare branches from which a few late cream of tartar pods still hung. It was easy to see why the Zulu said the gods had accidentally planted the baobab upside down with its roots in the air. Far ahead of them, a slow standing cloud of evaporation marked the position of the swamps, and the alluvial soil was sandy and yielding underfoot.
Just think of this, Capo, Sean was trying to divert him. You're probably one of the last men who will ever hunt a great elephant in the classical tradition of the long chase. This is the way it should be done, man. Not grinding around in a Land Rover and then leaning out of the window to kill him. This is how Sellerson, Karamojo Bell and Samaki Salmon hunted their elephant.
He saw Ricardo's expression light up at the idea of being compared to those grand masters of the chase, men from another age, when all elephant had been fair game. Samaki Salmon had hunted and killed 4,000 elephant in his lifetime. There'd been a different morality in those days. Today a man with a bag of those dimensions would be accounted a villain and a criminal. But in his day Samaki Salmon had been respected and honoured. He'd even hunted with Edward, Prince of Wales, as his client. Sean knew that Ricardo had an avid interest in the old-time elephant hunters, so he enlarged on their careers.
If you want to do it the way Karamojo Bell did it, Capo, you have to walk like this. Bell wore out 24 pairs of boots a year and had to replace his porters and gun-bearers every few weeks. They just couldn't keep up with him.
That was the golden age. Ricardo extended his stride a little as he thought about it. You and I should have lived then, Sean. We were born after our time. A true hunter should kill a great elephant with his legs. He should walk him down. That's the respectful and proper way. And that's what you're doing now, Capo. Enjoy every step you take, for you are treading in old Bell's footprints. Unfortunately, the effects of Sean's encouragement were not enduring. Within an hour, Ricardo was flagging again, and Sean noticed a new disconcerting unsteadiness in his gait. He stumbled and would have fallen had not Sean caught his arm.
We all need a 5-minute break and a cup of tea. Sean led him to the shade.
When Joe brought the tea mugs, Ricardo mumbled, Have you got a couple more aspirins for me?
You all right, Capo? He asked as he handed him the tablets.
Damned headache again, that's all.
But he would not meet Sean's eyes. Sean looked across at Claudia, who was sitting close beside her father, but she also avoided his gaze.
Do you two know something I don't? Sean demanded. You both look guilty as hell.
He didn't wait for an answer, but stood up and went to join Job at the small fire where he was baking a fresh batch of maize cakes for their evening meal.
The aspirin will make you feel better,
Claudia told her father softly. Of course, aspirin is a surefire cure for cancer once it reaches the brain, he agreed. And then as he saw her agonized expression, he blurted, I'm sorry. I don't know why I said that. Self-pity isn't my usual style.
Is it bad, Papa?
I can tolerate the headache, but I'm getting a little double vision that worries me, he admitted. Damn it. I was feeling so well a few days ago. It's all happened so quickly.
The exertion, she said, pitying him. Perhaps that's what's aggravated it. We should turn back.
No, he said with utter finality. Don't even talk about that again. She inclined her head in acquiescence.
The swamps are not far ahead. Perhaps we'll have a chance to rest, she said.
I don't want to rest, he said. I realize just how little time I have left. I don't want to waste a moment of it.
Sean came back to them.
Are you ready to go on?
Claudia glanced at her wristwatch. They had rested for less than half an hour. It was too short, and she would have protested, but her father pushed himself to his feet.
All set, he said.
And she could see that even that short break had refreshed him. They'd been going only a few minutes when Ricardo said, quite cheerfully,
Those hamburgers that Job has cooked smell just great. Makes me feel hungry. Those hamburgers are maize cakes, Sean chuckled. Sorry to disappoint you. You can't bullshit me, Ricardo chuckled with him. I can smell the fried onions and beef.
Papa? Claudia looked back over her shoulder and frowned sharply, and Ricardo stopped chuckling and looked distraught.
There might be hallucinations, Doc Andrews had warned Claudia. He may begin to see things or imagine various odours. I can't give you an exact progress of the disease, of course. And there may be periods of swift deterioration followed by longer periods of remission. Just remember, Claudia, that his fantasies will be very real to him, and episodes of hallucination can be followed by periods of complete lucidity.
That evening, Sean would not stop to brew tea.
We have to try and make up the ground we've lost, he told them,
and they ate the cold maize cakes and biltong, slivers of salted, air-dried venison, on the march.
One large hamburger with fried onions and all the trimmings coming up, Capo, Sean teased him.
Claudia glared at him, but Ricardo laughed uneasily and munched on the unappetizing fare as he walked. They no longer had a spoor to follow, so Sean kept going long after night had fallen. The long, tortuous miles fell slowly behind them, and the brilliant southern stars burned over their heads. It was almost midnight before they stopped and unrolled their sleeping bags. Sean let them sleep until the dawn light was strong enough to make out the way ahead. The landscape had changed. During the night they'd entered the region that was held in thrall by the great Zambezi. These were ancient floodplains that were inundated when the river broke its banks during the torrential rainy season. They were dry now, although almost devoid of trees. A few long-dead mopane and acacia thorn trees, drowned by the floods, still held up twisted bare branches to the hazy blue sky, standing out on the empty plains like lonely sentinels. As they moved out into the open, the dried mud had cracked into bricklets beneath their feet, the edges curling up, and the clumps of swamp grass were brown and matted and dead from drought. When the breeze switched fitfully, they could smell the swamps still out of view ahead, the odour of mud and rotting vegetation. The mirage shimmered across the plains, so there was no clear horizon. Land and sky merged into each other like water. When they looked back, the tree line crawled like a long black serpent below the milky sky, undulating and vibrating softly in the mirage, and the dust devils spun upon themselves, twisting and swaying like belly dancers. Out on the plain, Sean felt exposed and vulnerable. There was just the scant chance of a Frelimo patrol plane passing this way, searching for Renamo bands,
and they were as obvious as fleas on a white sheet. He wanted to hurry, but then glanced back at Ricardo and knew that they would have to rest again soon. Ahead of Sean, Matatu gave a cry that made his nerves jump. Sean knew what it meant, and he ran forward, passing Claudia, and stopped beside Matatu. "Well, all right." He clapped Matatu's shoulder, and then went down on one knee to examine the earth.
"What is it?" Ricardo sounded alarmed.
But Sean lifted his head and grinned at him.
"It's him, Tukutila. We've cut his spoor again, just where Matatu predicted that we would."
And he touched the marks of the huge pads, whose weight had crushed the bricklets of dried mud to talcum powder. The spoor was so clear that the difference between the bull's rounded front feet and the more oval hind feet was immediately apparent, and the forward edges of each footprint were nicked by his toenails.
"Still heading straight for the swamps."
Sean stood and shaded his eyes against the glare as he followed the direction of the spoor. Not far ahead, another line of trees was drawn like a pencil along the horizon, where a narrow curved finger of higher ground reached out across the plains.
"In a way, we are fortunate," Sean remarked. "A few years ago, there were so many herds of buffalo and game on these flats that Tukutila's spoor would have been wiped out in a few hours by their hooves. Now, since the Frelimo government converted them all to army rations, Tukutila is the only living thing for miles around."
"How far behind are we?"
"Ooh, we've made up a bit of ground."
Sean lowered his hand from his eyes and turned to him. "But not enough. And if the uglies catch us out here in the open, luckily Tukutila's spoor is headed straight for the line of trees ahead. They'll give us some cover." He gestured Matatu to take the spoor once again. Now the expanse of the wide plain was dimpled with old anthills, mounds of clay thrown up by colonies of termites, some of them the size of a large cottage. Tukutila's spoor meandered between them. However, the line of growth was by now so close that they could make out the individual trees. The finger of high ground formed a natural causeway from the edge of the forest across the wide plains to the beginning of the true swamps. There were ivory nut palms, bottle-stemmed palms, and the low ilala palms with their fan-shaped leaves mixed with wild fig, and on the highest ridge of the long causeway grew a few massive baobab with trunks of elephantine grey bark. With relief, Sean followed the spoor of the old bull off the plain and into the trees of the isthmus. Here the elephant had stopped to dig out the juicy root of an ilala palm and drop a pile of spongy yellow dung.
"The elephant rested here,"
Matatu explained, lowering his voice to a whisper.
"He is an old man now, and he tires easily. Here he stood to sleep. See how he shuffled his feet in the dust? And when he awoke, he dusted his body. See where he scooped it up with his trunk and threw it over his back?"
"How long did he stay here?"
Sean asked. And Matatu put his head on one side as he considered the question.
"He rested here until late yesterday afternoon, when the sun was there."
Matatu pointed 10 degrees above the western horizon.
"But when he went on, he went more slowly. He feels safe now that he is close to the swamps. We have gained on him."
Sean exaggerated Matatu's estimate as he passed it on to Ricardo and Claudia. He wanted to encourage them.
"We're making really good gains on him now." He put on a cheerful and confident air. "We might even catch up with him before he gets into the deep swamps, if we don't waste any time."
The spoor headed down the isthmus, and the old bull had fed quietly as he moved along it, keeping up on top of the low ridge where the bush was thickest. Directly ahead of them stood another gigantic baobab tree. Its bark was grey and folded and riven as the old bull's hide. For the moment, Sean had left Ricardo's side and moved up to his original position, behind Matatu. He wanted to caution the tracker, not to set too fast a pace. But before he could speak, he heard a strange, guttural cry behind him, and he whirled around. Ricardo's face was swollen and congested with blood. His eyes blazed and seemed to start from their sockets. Sean thought he was suffering from some kind of seizure, but Ricardo was pointing ahead, his hand shaking with violent emotion.
"There he is," he croaked in a thick, unnatural voice. "For God's sake, can't you see him?"